It's Thursday, May 14th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you here. We reported earlier on the unfortunate email sent by the former vice president of the former Normal Connecticut to a state legislator on the eve of an important decriminalization bill that was in that legislator's committee, which she subsequently filibustered to death. Anyway, the folks at the Drug Free America Foundation, or should I say the Non-Alcoholic, Non-Pharmaceutical, Non-Tobacco Drug Free America Foundation, have seized upon this incident as a way to portray marijuana legalization advocates as unstable and threatening and intimidating. It's some of the same old tripe from some of the same old players, Calvina Fay, Andrea Barthwell, Roger Morgan, and you can read my full deconstruction of it over at the Stash blog at stash.normal.org, but I'll just echo something that was written by Mr. Spoff on the Fresh Stash. You got a lot of nerve calling us threatening and intimidating when you're breaking into our homes, pointing automatic weapons at us, and shooting our pets in front of us. Anyway, back to the more fun side of marijuana law reform. We're still looking to form chapters all across the 50 states, and today I'm calling out the states of Kentucky and Tennessee. Now, we've got a great chapter in Tennessee, the Tennessee Normal chapter, but we're looking to form other sub-chapters all around the state. It's kind of a big state, a lot of area to drive through, so you can have a Normal chapter in your local area that works along with the state chapter in Tennessee. And for Kentucky, we're looking to get our first Normal chapter established there. So anyone in Tennessee or Kentucky, send me an email to stash@normal.org and let me know what city you're in, and I'll put you on the list as we try to build chapters in those states. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines with the, well, now seems annual story of marijuana's increasing potency. It's not your father's Woodstock weed, but it's the same old reefer madness lies. Then, new drug czar Gil Kerlikowske vows that we should end the war on drugs, or at least calling it that. Then the unfortunate story of a national champion wrestler who was stripped of her title for testing positive for THC, and in an interesting column here from Dog News, a story about cannabis and canines that supposes that dogs could be killed if they get into your stash. We'll debunk that one. We're also going to visit a little bit more pot and politics with Jesse Stout from the Rhode Island Patients Advocacy Coalition. They're looking to get a bill passed up there that would establish 3 nonprofit compassion centers in Rhode Island for medical marijuana states to acquire their medicine. In our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we continue our Winner's Fortnight. We're looking at all the songs that won the 2009 Global Marijuana Music Awards, and today's song is from Zenji San called Natural Ting. And in our Southern California scene, we visit with Terry Joyce, who brings us Patrick Duff, a religious marijuana practitioner down in Southern California, and his tale of the harrowing experiences he suffered as a victim of two DEA raids. It's all that and more coming up today on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Marijuana potency surpasses 10%, U.S. says. Oh, goody. Here comes a week of news stories on this old trope about pot 2.0. Hold on. From CNN. The average potency of marijuana, which has risen steadily for 3 decades, has exceeded 10% for the first time, the U.S. government will report on Thursday. At the University of Mississippi's Potency Monitoring Project, where thousands of samples of seized marijuana are tested every year, Project Director Mahmoud El-Soli said some samples have THC levels exceeding 30%. Average THC concentrations will continue to climb before leveling off at 15 or 16% in 5 to 10 years, El-Soli predicted. The stronger marijuana is of particular concern because high concentrations of THC have the opposite effect of low concentrations, officials say. What? The opposite effect? You mean if you smoked the old pot, you got high, and if you smoke the new pot, you get, what, low? If you smoke pot that's somewhere in between, does anything happen at all? Do you just stay middle? The only opposite effect between low-quality and high-quality weed is the reaction you gave your dealer when you've spent $300 on an ounce of it. In addition, while experienced marijuana users may limit their intake of potent marijuana, young and inexperienced users may not moderate their intake and possibly suffer from dysphoria, paranoia, irritability, and other negative effects. If these young and inexperienced users are smoking or vaporizing it, the time between intake and effect is only a few seconds. It's not like doing shots of whiskey where 40 minutes later, while you're on your 6th shot, you realize you're way drunk and should have stopped 4 shots ago. With marijuana, you smoke it, you feel it. If it's not enough, you smoke more. If it's enough, you stop. Potent marijuana also poses significant risk to the developing adolescent brain, said Edward Jurath, acting director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Absolutely. That's why we always say adolescents shouldn't smoke pot. Potent alcohol also poses significant risks to the developing adolescent brain, and its average potency ranges between 1.5% to 75.5%. And yet every year I see a new marketing campaign for some fruity, wine coolery, alcoholic beverage few people over age 21 would be caught dead drinking. Increasing potency is leading to higher admissions to emergency rooms and drug treatment programs, officials say. I don't know if that's an intended pun, but I doubt it. I think they meant more admissions or greater number of admissions. Either way, it is a lie. The emergency room figure comes from DAWN, the Drug Abuse Warning Network, which tracks when anyone admitted to an ER tests positive for or admits use of marijuana. Since marijuana is the most used substance and it stays in your system for days or weeks, it's no surprise it turns up in the people who go to the ER. However, the DAWN stats do not measure the cause of the ER visit. So, it is possible that you play softball, pull a hamstring, go to the ER, and they detect the joint you smoked at the picnic last weekend. That's a marijuana-related emergency room visit. You might smoke some pot and then shoot some heroin, overdose on the heroin, and go to the ER, telling them what you've done. That's a marijuana-related emergency room visit. You might be a medical marijuana patient driving to work after medicating last night 10 hours ago and get T-boned by a drunk driver. That's a marijuana-related emergency room visit. The drug treatment admissions are an even worse statistic. When those ER folks let the police know you've tested positive for pot, and remember, that only means you've used it, not that you're currently high, the nice judge gives you the choice of going to jail or going into a drug treatment program, and sometimes it's not a choice. So, they arrest you for pot, sentence you to treatment, and then point to increased treatment numbers and say, "See how dangerous it is? That's why we need to arrest people for pot." The average THC for tested marijuana during 2008 was 10.1%, according to the government, compared to 1983, when it was reportedly under 4%. Even drugs seized at the United States' southwest border are showing increasing potency, the Office of National Drug Control Policy says. The median potency increased from 4.8% in 2003 to 7.3% in 2007. Marijuana from Mexico and other southern sources traditionally had lower THC content than other sources. So then what you're telling us is that under your prohibition of marijuana, it has become more than twice as potent. By your standards, during the time you have been arresting and incarcerating people for marijuana, it has become stronger, more people are in the ER because of it, and more people are addicted to it. Maybe we ought to try a different policy. Drug czar Kurt Lukowski calls for end to war on drugs analogy. From the Wall Street Journal, the Obama administration's new drug czar says he wants to banish the idea that the U.S. is fighting, quote, a war on drugs, end quote, a move that would underscore a shift favoring treatment over incarceration in trying to reduce illicit drug use. In his first interview since being confirmed to head the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, Gil Kerlikowske said Wednesday the bellicose analogy was a barrier to dealing with the nation's drug issues. He said, quote, "Regardless of how you try to explain to people it's a war on drugs or a war on a product, people see a war as a war on them. We are not at war with people in this country," end quote. Mr. Kerlikowske's comments are a signal that the Obama administration is set to follow a more moderate and likely more controversial stance on the nation's drug problems. Prior administrations talked about pushing treatment and reducing demand while continuing to focus primarily on a tough criminal justice approach. The Obama administration is likely to deal with drugs as a matter of public health rather than criminal justice alone, with treatment's role growing relative to incarceration, Mr. Kerlikowske said. It's a step in the right direction, but it still begins with the flawed premise that use of marijuana by Americans is something that the government needs to reduce. It's still the all use is abuse model that says if we catch an adult with pot, there needs to be some sanction. I'm happy they wish to change that sanction from a prison cell to an unnecessarily forced treatment bed, but all that accomplishes is a redirection of the drug war money from the prison industrial complex to the drug testing rehab industries. Senator Tom Coburn, the lone senator to vote against Mr. Kerlikowske, was concerned about the permissive attitude toward marijuana enforcement, a spokesman for the conservative Oklahoma Republican said. Mr. Kerlikowske said the issue was one of limited police resources, adding that he doesn't support efforts to legalize drugs. He also said he supports needle exchange programs, calling them, quote, part of a complete public health model for dealing with addiction, end quote. James Pasco, executive director of the Fraternal Order of Police, the nation's largest law enforcement labor organization, said that while he holds Mr. Kerlikowske in high regard, police officers are wary. Quote, while I don't necessarily disagree with Gill's focus on treatment and demand reduction, I don't want to see it at the expense of law enforcement. People need to understand that when they violate the law, there are consequences, end quote. They just can't get past the moral imperative to punish potheads, can they? The way prohibitionists see it, they said don't do it, so you just shouldn't do it. There's no questioning of why we shouldn't do it, no examination of the consequences of doing it versus the consequences of getting caught, and no consideration that doing it may actually be beneficial for some. Imagine if the government came out and said it was taking steps to reduce drinking by adults. Not drunk driving, or binge drinking by college kids, or alcoholism, but just overall alcohol consumption in this country. Imagine if anyone found to be intoxicated on alcohol outside their home was considered to be an addict and was forced into treatment by a court at their own expense. Imagine entire advertising campaigns showing the reality of people drinking, fights, puking, regrettable one-night stands with an alcohol, just say no theme. But no, despite over 100,000 deaths per year, thousands of drunk driving incidents, and countless rude and disgusting encounters with drunk people, day after day I see commercials of exceptionally healthy, attractive, non-drunk people reminding me to drink responsibly. It is assumed that most people are adults who can handle a drink or two, and the few who can't hold their liquor are just the unavoidable cost of living in a free society. Why does this responsible use model not apply to the mildly psychotropic non-toxic herb that never kills and its largely non-violent responsible adult users? For marijuana, why must we favor treatment over incarceration instead of legalization over incarceration? National champion wrestler loses title over positive marijuana metabolite test. From Bloomberg News. U.S. wrestler Stephanie Lee forfeited her national championship after testing positive for marijuana at the April meet in Las Vegas. Lee, age 24, who wrestles in the 72-kilogram weight class, tested positive for carboxy-THC, a marijuana metabolite, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency said in a news release. Lee's three-month suspension was reduced to time served after she completed the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency's Anti-Doping Educational Program on May 9th. She also lost her number one seed for the May 30th-31st World Team Trials in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Rather than being an automatic finalist by virtue of winning the Nationals, she'll have to qualify. National champion wrestler uses marijuana. World's greatest Olympic swimmer uses marijuana. Various NBA and NFL players use marijuana. Pro wrestlers, champion sumo wrestlers, and mixed martial artists use marijuana. Olympic snowboarding wouldn't even exist without marijuana. Where's this amotivational syndrome I keep hearing so much about? Why would world-class athletes whose performance depends on their finely tuned human body, use marijuana if it had even the slightest chance of reducing their ability to train and perform? If anything, I believe the use of marijuana is performance enhancing by helping to kill pain, reduce inflammation, and ease stress for these athletes. Off the leash, marijuana and dogs. I've only recently become a dog person. I fell in dog love with Roscoe, the Jack Russell Terrier, a couple of years ago, and since then I can't imagine living my life without him. When my wife takes him out of town, I miss him more than her. Only because I can call, email, and text her. I'm not a cad. He sits on a chair beside me as I type up news stories for the stash. Around 10 a.m., he makes me take him outside to pee, forcing me to disconnect from the Borg for a while, probably keeping me somewhat more physically and mentally healthy. Around 1 p.m., we walk to the park with the ball and have our noontime dog fun event. Around 5 p.m., he needs to go out again and forces me to take another break. Otherwise, I could literally be in front of the computer from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. straight. And I've done so many times. It's not healthy. So, I was amused when a stasher sent me a link to DogNews.com's magazine, Volume 25, Issue 17, dated April 24th, 2009, page 58, and an article by Sean Cohen called Off the Leash, Marijuana and Dogs. But should the effort to legalize marijuana ever see the light of day, what would be the effect on our canine companions? We know that secondhand smoke can cause lung and nasal cancer in dogs, as well as breathing problems, salivation, diarrhea, vomiting, and cardiac abnormalities. What would happen to man's best friends should they be exposed to not only tobacco smoke, but marijuana smoke as well? I don't know, but since tobacco smoke causes cancer and lung disease in humans and marijuana smoke does not, I'd suppose the marijuana smoke doesn't seriously hurt dogs either. And man's best friends are being exposed to marijuana smoke right now, and we haven't heard a lot of problems with that, have we? And what if our curious canine friends decided to eat a stash of hash? Then we put him in his timeout box and sternly say, "Bad dog!" The signs of a dog that has inhaled or ingested marijuana may include incoordination and listlessness, along with dilated pupils, slow heart rate, and sometimes urinary incontinence. And riding around in a van with four teenagers trying to solve mysteries for Scooby Snacks. During a study done in 2002, 250 cases of marijuana ingestion were reported to the ASPCA, resulting in two deaths. It's harder to know what the mental damage may be to dogs under the influence of marijuana, but it's believed that they will become fearful and scared because they don't know what's happening. Oh, I love it when people play sloppy with the studies. There was, indeed, a 2002 peer-reviewed paper entitled Marijuana Exposure in Animals by Caroline W. Donaldson, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. It does confirm that a dog should not eat cannabis. According to the ASPCA APCC database, the most common side effects of marijuana toxicosis are depression, ataxia, and bradycardia. Other signs include agitation, vocalization, vomiting, diarrhea, hypersalivation, tachycardia, hypothermia, mydriasis, urinary incontinence, seizures, and coma. But the paper also notes, an LD50, or the amount for a dose that will kill half of those who take it, has not been established in dogs or cats. Research in dogs and monkeys showed that oral doses of Delta-9 THC and Delta-8 THC, ranging from 3,000 to 9,000 milligrams per kilogram, were not lethal, and all dogs recovered within 24 hours of ingestion. 3 to 9 grams per kilogram means a dog like Roscoe, who weighs 10 kilograms, eating 1 to 3 ounces of oral THC at 100% potency like Marinol pills, not 1 to 3 ounces of the new and improved 10% THC Superpot. And the kicker? Out of more than 250 cases of accidental marijuana ingestion reported to the ASPCA-APCC, two deaths were reported. In one cat, exposure to multiple agents was possible, and the results of a gross necropsy revealed that the animal probably died of complications of cardiomyopathy. The second death reported was a horse with signs attributed to colic, but a gross necropsy was not done. The prognosis is favorable for symptomatic animals with no secondary complications, such as aspiration pneumonia. With supportive care, these animals usually recover within 72 hours. So, the two deaths the author refers to, implying they are deaths of dogs from cannabis ingestion, are actually a cat and a horse with other serious health problems. Is this guy auditioning for a job at the Non-Alcoholic, Non-Pharmaceutical, Non-Tobacco, Drug-Free America Foundation? In the same study, the author reports that no veterinarian surveyed had ever filed an animal abuse complaint when someone brings in a stoned dog. She also notes that veterinarians often have trouble getting the owners to tell them their dog had eaten cannabis, since possession of it is a crime. If the vet doesn't know the true cause, she may proceed as if the dog had ingested a serious toxin like antifreeze, and the treatment for that may cause more harm to the dog than the cannabis did. Bottom line, pot's not good for your dog, but it's not going to seriously hurt him. Personal note, I think people who purposefully get their pets high for amusement's sake are being cruel. Owning a Jack Russell Terrier is a high. They're like Red Bull with fur. Pets are great the way they are. No need to alter their consciousness.
So here's the deal. We've got this new president who seems really cool. I mean, the guy's well-spoken, he's open-minded, he seems to listen to people, and he's extremely well-educated. I mean, he graduated from Harvard Law School. But this is a guy who's admitted to smoking marijuana, that illegal leaf that just ruins people's lives. How could the president of the United States have ever done such a thing? Maybe because he knew it was less addictive than both alcohol and nicotine, and knew it can be consumed responsibly. But it's probably been a while since he smoked a joint. So if I had one thing to say to Barack Obama about cannabis, it would probably be something like, "Hey dude, I'm one of 80 million people in your country who has smoked marijuana, and so are you." Or maybe I would say over 700,000 people were arrested in this last year for marijuana-related charges. Or something like, "Let's re-examine this law altogether." Or possibly that $1.3 billion is spent annually fighting marijuana, not including the cost of prison management and construction. Or I might just end up saying, "Hey man, you know the facts. Let's fix this mess."
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations. All right, we're continuing our look around the country at the different state legislatures that are still debating various marijuana law reform measures. We're going to go now to the state of Rhode Island, which has a bill regarding medical marijuana compassion centers. And here to discuss it with us from the Rhode Island Patients Advocacy Coalition is Jesse Stout. Jesse, welcome back.
Hi, Russ. Thanks for having me.
Before we get too deep into the interview, let's remind folks how they can get in touch with your coalition.
Absolutely. Anyone interested in medical marijuana in Rhode Island should contact the Rhode Island Patient Advocacy Coalition through ripatients.org.
All right, ripatients.org. So this bill, a lot of people, of course, everybody knows that Rhode Island is one of the 13 states that has approved medicinal use of marijuana. But like a lot of those states, there's the problem of access to the medicinal marijuana. Tell folks about this bill, what the problem is they're trying to solve with it.
Right. Currently, we have this supply problem that patients who are too ill to grow their own medical marijuana and don't have a trusted friend or family member to serve as a caregiver have no safe access to their medicine. We have patients who are forced to go to the street drug dealers to get their medicine, and this can be a dangerous, potentially violent interaction, totally unacceptable. Under this year's legislation, the House and Senate would approve the Department of Health licensing a non-profit compassion center that would be an independent organization to grow and distribute medical marijuana as a caregiver for an unlimited number of patients.
All right. So this bill introduced, it's already made it through the Senate, am I correct?
That's right. The legislation was introduced in February, heard in the House and Senate in March, and then the Senate voted last month. In April, the Senate approved the bill 35-2.
Okay, so I guess the next hurdle now would be to get it through the House. How are things looking there, and what's the schedule look like?
Well, things are looking very well ever since our great, overwhelming Senate vote. 35-2 is really strong here. So we're looking forward to our House of Representatives vote next Wednesday, May 20th.
Okay. And, of course, if we get it through the Senate and the House, we do have that hurdle of your governor, don't we?
That's right. In the meantime, we're asking people to call their state representatives in anticipation of getting the best majority we can in the House so that we'll already have the necessary margin to override a potential gubernatorial veto.
Okay. And, of course, you'll have the contact information at RI Patients?
That's right. There's already information at ripatients.org and in our most recent newsletter on our website for how to contact your state representative, both now in anticipation of the House vote and later on, to ask our representatives to override the governor's veto if he does that.
Okay. Now, when we start talking about these compassion centers, of course, one of the things people are going to think of are California dispensaries. How would this system differ from that?
Well, I understand that California has SB 420 allowing these dispensaries to sell medicine to patients, but there's no state regulations addressing how or where or when that activity can take place. Here on the East Coast, the culture is such that we're a lot more comfortable with bureaucratic rulemaking, where people know exactly what's allowed and what isn't. We were really proud to see in March when New Mexico became the first state to have state regulations for nonprofit distribution of medical marijuana, and we'd really love to be the second state. We want Rhode Island's Department of Health to also license the nonprofit production and distribution of medical marijuana so that patients know that a compassion center is a safe place approved by the state government.
That would be excellent. And, you know, Rhode Island, of course, geographically is not a very large state, so is there a limit to the number of these compassion centers?
Yes, that's right. Unlike California or New Mexico, our legislation here in Rhode Island would specifically say that the compassion center licenses would be limited. The Department of Health would issue only 3 nonprofit compassion center licenses, which seems like an appropriate number in a state that takes about 1 hour to drive across.
Yeah. Now, is there any other provisions in this bill regarding the Department of Health making any sort of scientific inquiry into the cannabis that they're licensing for dispensation, like keeping track of the purity or the or how it's grown or THC levels or anything like that?
Well, there's one provision in this bill that would add a question on the patient application form for the medical marijuana program, where patients can check off if they want Department of Health to contact them about any studies, clinical research involving medical marijuana that may be happening in our state. Other than that, there are a lot of regulatory provisions in the bill addressing compassion center operation, but nothing else on science.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, this looks like good legislation to me as far as I've seen it, and it's important that the states start looking at this when they're looking at introducing medical marijuana legislation, or for the states that already have it. We've got to do something to provide safe access for these patients. Otherwise, all we're doing is supporting the black market dealers. We've got to get the patients off the streets, and we're glad that you folks out there in Rhode Island are working for that. Jesse, before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners about the bill or the state?
People who are interested in learning more about becoming a patient in Rhode Island or potentially applying for a compassion center license might benefit from our meetings. RIPAC has monthly community meetings where everyone interested in medical marijuana in Rhode Island is invited to gather at a central location to find out more about the medical marijuana program. After that, patients who are already licensed in the program are all invited down to our patient meeting. This is modeled after the Oregon Normal cardholder meeting, and we would love to have all of Rhode Island's patients and caregivers know that they're welcome at our monthly patient meeting to discuss these issues more intimately.
Excellent. Check out the website at ripatients.org. You can get all the information on the meetings, where to go and when. And Jesse, thanks again for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks again for having me, Russ.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at Normal, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at normal, N-O-R-M-L.org.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards.
Today's song, Natural Ting by Zenji-san, is a quadruple 2009 Global Marijuana Music Awards winner. Zenji-san walked away with Best Reggae, Best Dub, Best Legalization, and Best Hemp for his song, Natural Ting. Zenji-san, from Bermuda, has a broad background of musical experience. Zenji plays numerous instruments, sings in harmony groups, and is pursuing a solo career. Zenji has toured across Florida and Bermuda, appeared in commercials, and performed with dancehall greats such as Batty 45 and Buju Banton. You can check out the latest about Zenji-san at myspace.com/Zenji-san Samurai Tune. Congratulations to Zenji-san for his quadruple win in the 2009 Global Marijuana Music Awards. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's the winning track from Zenji-san, Natural Ting.
All herbalists, all ganja man, put down Babylon, cut them off from the herb. It's so absurd. Carry me.
Only reason with me, brethren, we smoke the herb, break it up and twist it up again. That's a natural thing that we do. The Babylon, them one fit come and watch right through. When me reason with me brethren, we smoke the herb, break it up and twist it up again. That's another thing that we undo. But the Babylon, them one fit come and watch right through.
One of it take a toke, and me say one of it take a toke. It was funk, punk, King Salaman's great, that's no joke. Got no coke, devil street, only natural king. Me smoke me ball, them one 10 years feel little. Wicked man, got plant on earth, free and simple. And act like they don't know, and it's time make that logo.
Virgin, we smoke the herb, break it up and twist it up again. That's a natural thing that we do. But the Babylon, them one fake come and watch right through. When me reason with me, virgin, we smoke the herb, break it up and twist it up again. That's a natural thing that we do. But the Babylon, them one fake come and watch right through.
The US Declaration of Independence paper was made out of the seed that they make prisoners. Come number one, kind stick, and they block down me now. Northern Lights and the one silver pearl, fire blaze early, but can't forget early girl. The highest grade you know, Zion I spirit for sure. City righteous, sleep on this earth. If the meditation in on the book, it's what it's worth.
All herbalists, all ganja man.
Hold me reason with me virgin, we smoke the herb, break it up and twist it up again. That's a natural thing that we do. But the Babylon, them one fake come and watch right through. When me reason with me virgin, we smoke the herb, break it up and twist it up again. That's a natural thing that we do. But the Babylon,
it up and twist it up again. That's a natural thing that we do. But the Babylon, them one fake comment, but that's right true. When me reason with me brethren, we smoke the herb, break it up and twist it up again. That's a natural thing that we do. But the Babylon, them one fake comment, but that's right true. Break it up and twist it up again. Twist it up again. It up and twist it up again. Twist it up again. Break it up and twist it up again. Twist it up again. Break it up and twist it up again.
It's so absurd.
Percent of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORMA. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORMAL, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Weed.
That's Hoovy Valley, Hoovy Hall.
Weed.
Where any office boy or young mechanic.
Now it's time for a report from the epicenter of American cannabis culture with our Southern California correspondent. You know her from ComedyNation.com and her appearance as a finalist on season one of NBC's Last Comic Standing. It's our friend, cannabis comedian and marijuana activist, the lovely and talented Terry Joyce.
Hey, Terry, welcome back to the Stash. How's it going?
It's going great. Doing very well.
Good. Hey, we're finally seeing a big, bright, yellow, glowing disc in the sky from time to time here in Portland, Oregon. How are things going down there in California? Nice and sunny, I suppose.
It is. The weather's been very good. It's pretty good here. It was a beautiful day. I actually went to Blue Iris's funeral.
Oh, that's right. You told us about that last week.
Blue Iris was a big, you know, she was a marijuana activist and a supporter. And what I observed, it was a Jewish burial, and it's interesting to see how accepting our culture is becoming around the issue of cannabis, because we all got to come up and speak from our heart, and one of her roommates, you know, stood up and said that Blue Iris would knock on his door every morning to smoke weed, and that she loved weed, and the rabbi laughed, which was interesting. And then after that, another man got up and said, I was Blue Iris's drug counselor, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then it closed off with, you know, Erica McLean saying that she was a pornographer. And, you know, the rabbi was really cool about porn and weed, which I think is very progressive in our society today.
It definitely beats some of the funerals I've been to, I suppose. That's quite interesting story there. Now, we always love talking to you, Terry, because you meet the most interesting people down there in Southern California, kind of the hotbed of marijuana activism, especially when we talk about, you know, Prop 215 and medical marijuana. And once again, you've brought us a great guest here that can talk, you know, from experience on some of these issues. Why don't you go ahead and do the intro?
Well, yeah, you do meet people in Southern California in interesting ways. I actually met Patrick Duff in the raid for the first time, and I'm trying to remember how it happened, but I think he might have gotten hogtied right next to me, which is an interesting way to meet someone,
I guess.
And, yeah, And ever since then, you know, we've gotten to know each other. He owns a couple of dispensaries himself, and unfortunately had to experience another raid at his own dispensary. And I'm very happy to have him here today. It's introducing Patrick Duff.
Well, hello, Patrick.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. So Terry mentions that you have a couple of dispensaries. Why don't you tell us, you know, about them, you know, where they're at and what they're called?
Well, mine are a little different. They're actually ministries, so they're actually set up as churches.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so basically what they are is the Liberty Bell Temple is set up as a church, and the reason why it's called the Liberty Bell Temple is because me and another friend who is a fellow Rastafarian, we're both Rastafarians, we went to the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, where we were arrested on purpose several times, having religious ceremonies where we were smoking the sacrament of our faith, which is cannabis, and the medicine of the state of California. And we actually got, you know, arrested and taken to court, and we lost in court, but we won on appeal. About 4 years ago, I said, you know what? I love this decision, and I want to take it and run with it. And I knew that California had the medical marijuana law, but I knew that federally, you know, it was very questionable about the state law to federal law. Mm-hmm. And I knew that people could get prosecuted with state law. But I also knew that the First Amendment gives us freedom of religion, and that if I practice under the guise of a church and the guise of religion, in which I've always done, actually when me and Terry met, the day that we met, she was there to help try and open the doctor's office right next to the place that I was consulting. And all of a sudden, 15, you know, men and like two women, all with machine guns, and I mean, it looked like it was Iraq all of a sudden, stormed in. And I told everybody before they came in, just go to the floor and put your hands up, you know. So we all went to the floor, we put our hands up, and they still proceeded to come in and, you know, forcibly, you know, jimmied me to the ground, you know, pushed me down. And everybody else got treated rather okay, and, you know, they kept me separate from everybody else for a while, and I couldn't realize why. I thought they were going to beat me up for a minute, you know. I'm from Philadelphia, that's what happens there. But they didn't, and, you know, the second time, just to let you know, I got raided again, and I got raided here at my church. It's in Silver Lake, and it's in Los Angeles, California. And when they raided me the second time, I wasn't inside the church, but they used helicopters. They had helicopters flying. They had, you know, like 15 men, again, armed men and flap jackets. They put a 60-year-old Rasta man, you know, a gun to his face and made him lie on the ground. He's got a hernia where he told him I could die if I lay on my belly, and they made him lay on his belly anyway. They almost shot my dog. If my security guard didn't lay across the dog, they would have shot him. Then they get in here, and what they do is they take, you know, quote-unquote evidence, right? That's what they're supposed to do. It says on the warrant. And that was their reason to actually raid me, that somebody got a flyer and was offended by a flyer. Mine says holy anointing oil available. Cures acne, arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. Mine actually doesn't even say the word marijuana on it. But I got machine guns put to everybody's faces. And here's the evidence they took. You're going to like this. They took all the money that they could find. They took all the pot that they could find, all the hash they could find. They left the scales. They left the jars. They left, you know, any evidence like turkey bags that had pot in it, you know, before. They left the bottles to fill the pot. They left the labels. But they took a 50-inch TV. They took a 50-inch screen TV.
Yeah.
As evidence.
Yeah.
Now, if that's evidence, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what it's evidence of, what they're looking for. Oh, and they took all my patient files. And you know what they also did? The crazy thing is about a month before that we got raided, which is in December 2nd of 2008, a security guard got shot and killed around the corner from here.
I remember the story.
And he was unarmed. An unarmed security guard got shot and killed. Okay, at a dispensary. A month later, they come raid me. They arrest my security guard. They take him downtown and detain him. They take all his weapons, and they tell him he can't have any weapons around, you know, medical marijuana.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, are they trying to get people killed? I mean, I have a licensed and trained security guard who's licensed with the state of California under their licensing program, who's been a security guard for 15 years, has a valor record, and he now, when he went to go register his weapon, he tried to register a weapon, they had they have an arrest on his record for that, but no charge.
It's highly questionable, a lot of this, and that's why we are trying to end this stupid prohibition. One thing that's happened recently, though, that, you know, at least we've heard tell from the Attorney General that they're saying that they won't conduct these raids anymore unless there is a violation of state law. What do you think about that, the Attorney General's promise to end the raids?
Can we get that in writing, please?
Good point.
I think it's a bunch of malarkey.
Yeah.
And they've raided several places since then. They just raided somewhere in Bakersfield.
That's right.
And
that's right.
What I think that the certain local police stations still have a stigma about medical marijuana, and them areas, there are conservative areas that do, Bakersfield being one, Sacramento being another, San Diego being another, have local soccer moms controlling the politics of the area. And it's fearing what's going to happen to little Johnny rather than looking at the, the situation and addressing it as an adult and saying, okay, well, there's adult use as these people are having, which is conducted in a regulated way where kids don't even have the ability to get it, because at the door we check IDs. We check the IDs, we call the doctor, we do more verification systems in the dispensary than any pharmacy ever does. Every time someone walks in, we have to check their ID, we have to check the date that the recommendation is good to. The first time they walk in, we have to call every single doctor. And if we can't get a hold of the doctor, we can't help them, even if the prescription looks fine, or the recommendation. Now, at a pharmacy, they don't call the doctor unless they feel something's wrong.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's the thing that's so amazing to me. You kind of highlight it there, that drugs that are much, much more dangerous are treated with less oversight and restriction than the least harmful substance ever known to mankind. It's incredibly stupid.
And the state can't see fit to tax Viagra, but they're going to see fit to try and tax cannabis. And it's like, whoa, man. Like, I have people here that are dying. It says, just like as you said, where, you know, the porn culture and all this is becoming more in light with even the religious community. What it's saying is even the people who are Orthodox Jews and hardcore right-wing Christians are seeing the stupidity of our federal government's war on cannabis. So people who even 30 years ago would refuse to say anything are now saying something because they say, you know what, somebody also knows somebody that has an effect through medical cannabis, you know, somebody that was sick, somebody that's dying, and somebody, you know, when it becomes so prevalent amongst every state, amongst all the people, and everybody sees the use and the effects, what will happen then is all the history books will have to be rewritten. And they will be. And that's why, you know, I don't even worry when I wake up in the morning if they take me to jail. Because if you take me to jail for what I'm doing, I don't want to live in this country anymore.
Wow, you said a lot of stuff there, and it's really well taken here. Patrick Duff's a dispensary owner in Southern California. A religious practitioner in Southern California.
My brother.
And a victim of two DEA raids. Your experiences should never have to be duplicated by anyone else, and that's why we're here fighting. Terry and Patrick, thank you guys so much for joining us here on The Stash, and we'll have you back again sometime.
God bless. Rastafari.
Thank you.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder that there's plenty of videos and other types of posts you'll find on the Stash blog at stash.normal.org that you never get time to get to here on the Stash podcast. One that's getting a lot of commentary right now is entitled "Cop Kicks Surrendered Prone Suspect in Head, Then High Fives Partner." You gotta see this helicopter footage from California where this man is literally spread-eagled face down on the ground, and a police officer comes up and kicks him full on in the face for no reason. This is part of why we have such a us versus them mentality on the streets between the people and the police. Large degree of it has to do with this stupid war on drugs.
legalize marijuana so that we can all feel safe around our police officers again. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.